National Institutes of Health doesn't actually exist. But it is nevertheless a condition, because not all children are equal and the school system wants them equal. And we start diagnosing kids with ADD in order to get them all about the on the same behavioral level.
And for our listeners out there, that's attention deficit disorder, ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Some kids don't pay attention in school. They're daydreamers. Maybe they're geniuses. Maybe they're thinking about other things. Maybe they're not challenged by the school, but, oh, we've got to get them onto drugs. And so they've got ADD, or and they have a group of symptoms. It's not anything more than simply a group of symptoms. You have it of those, why you get the diagnosis, and now you've got to be treated. And we're going to be back here just a moment or two with Dr. Jack Clooney as we begin exploring the experiments that are done on the American people. And if you doubt that, there's a wonderful book written by the former editor of the New England Journal of Medicine called The Truth About the Drug Companies. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm
psychotic behavior in later teens. I mean, they're terrible drugs. Of course, Ritalin, which is the ADD and ADHD are right in the middle. But there's some information on Vioxx and some other things on there, too. You know, the drug companies are paying these detailers, as you called them. They're high-paid salespeople. Most of them are making $125,000 to $160,000. And, you know, it's a common fact that the drug companies spend a huge amount of money on the medical profession every year. Now, it just doesn't stop when medical doctors graduate from school and the drug company comes in with stethoscopes and other things for them. If it stopped there, it would be okay, I suppose. But what happens is the drug company, according to some papers that I've read recently, drug companies are spending $40,000 a year per physician on the average. That's an enormous amount of money.
And that's just trying to get the doctors to go ahead and prescribe their medications.
Absolutely.
Dr. Angel was, mm-hmm. Marsha Angel was the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, which is the most prestigious of all the medical journals. And I used to read that, you know, when I was young and had the time to read a lot of medical journals. But you know, then she, of course, was on the staff at Harvard University. Of course, she wrote a book called The Truth About the Drug Companies. Well, the pharmaceutical industry really began to monitor, and I did debate with somebody from the pharmaceutical industry, a PhD who worked for them, who was actually a propagandist for the drug companies, and it became very obvious that they were tracking everything she was doing during the debate. And when I pointed that out to the PhD, to the doctor from the drug companies, he was quite defensive, telling me, oh, well, the only reason they knew what she was doing was because they took a clipping service. Well, I don't believe that at all. They will go after anybody who tries to tell the American people the truth. And one of the things that Dr. Angel pointed out is that the drug companies spend almost as much money on marketing of their do as they do on research. And most of the research money is not going into the fundamental research. You're paying for that with your tax money through the research done by the NIH. The research money that the drug companies do, usually on their Me Too drugs, in other words, another drug very, very similar to one that's already on the market, but they want to get their share of the market, is simply for clinical trials, and sometimes they'll pay doctors $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 to recruit a patient into this, and the doctor gets enough patients into this clinical trial, and then the patient then becomes a human guinea pig for these medications. Be very, very careful. Because, of course, when the doctor has a financial motivation to get you into a trial, you really wonder, is he interested in you, or is he interested in making money for the drug companies? Not only that, but certainly when you're doing a clinical trial, if you come up with an answer the drug company doesn't like, you'll never do another clinical trial, and you won't get paid again. And I wish that all doctors were motivated, as I was, and I think so many people in my era, by wanting to help people. But you see, America has changed, and we've certainly gotten away from that idea of a noblesse oblige, or really wanting to help people. And medicine has gone from a profession to a business, just as now doctors are no longer doctors, they're providers. Patients aren't patients, they're consumers, and they've changed the terminology, they've brought advertising in, and medicine is no longer a noble profession. It's simply a business. And when you have that situation in a country that has lost its moral foundation, why, you certainly want to be very, very cautious when you are recruited into a drug trial.
Absolutely. It's not only, we have a copy of the Hippocratic Oath on our website. Now, medicine is no longer, the Hippocratic Oath is still done when people graduate from medical school, but it's if you read the Hippocratic Oath and you look at the way medicine is being provided today, it's laughable. Not only do no harm, but do not discriminate between those who can pay and who cannot pay. Come on. Let a poor person get heart surgery in this country. Let's find out how difficult or exactly how effective the Hippocratic Oath is. We have stated before that according to the American Medical Association, these aren't my figures, but according to the American Medical Association, 783,000 people die from medical mistakes every year. Now, most of those mistakes are drug-related.
Well, because you're talking about people who might be taking some of the anti-inflammatory medications, get GI bleeds and die. This is a very, very common complication.
Correct.
You can still get this, but that's why they came up with the COX-2 inhibitors, which were to replace Motrin and Naprosyn and the others. The only trouble is that they, at least the Vioxx, increased on the initial studies the incidence of heart disease and stroke 7 times, and what did they do? Well, they figured they'd run another trial and compare Vioxx with Celebrex, because Celebrex they knew was going to increase the heart disease, and still Vioxx increased the incidence 3.5 times over a product that they knew actually increased the incidence of heart disease and stroke.
Absolutely.
That's all covered in Dr. David Graham's testimony before the Senate last November. And incidentally, that is my April newsletter. If any of you want to go to my website, do you have that Dr. Graham's
testimony? It is on our website.
Well, then you go up to Dr. Clooney's website and read that. It's one of the most heartrending, you know, testimonies, because it shows what happens to an honest man working for a government agency who wants to bring out the truth, and how they go out to get him.
Yes, and, you know, let's look at that 783,000 people. Now, there's an average on a 737 jet, a passenger jet, there's an average of 130 people on that jet. I think it holds 133. But there's an average of 130 people on each 737 that flies, the most popular airplane in our skies today. And if you take that 787,000 people and bring it down to earth so you can understand it, that is the equivalent of 17 737s a day falling out of the sky. Now, we all know that if three 737s would fall out of the sky this week, we'd ground the whole American fleet. But yet, the drugs are killing people much, you know, a lot more than any other. They're the number one killer in the United States today. Not heart disease, not cancer, but drugs, according to the AMA. And this is, you know, when we look at the travesty, and the one thing that gets me ticked faster than anything else is kids. Every child, one in four children, have ADD according to their schools. Now, who are the schools to diagnose disease? And when we figure that half of American children, the experts are saying, will be on some sort of these drugs in the next 10 years. Half of American children. Now, that's a crime. Drugging American children is not the way to educate them. But, of course, we have to educate educators before we can do that.
So. Well, you know, this is so reminiscent of Aldous Huxley's book, The Brave New World. And I think people ought to go back and read this, because this is really a mind comp of what's coming down the line, and they wanted to have everybody on drugs. And, you know, really, we did a wonderful interview with our friend Dr. Blaylock earlier today, talking about the scientific studies that show, even with the criminals and prisons, I mean, if you gave them supplementary vitamins and a good diet and changed their metabolism, why, you cut down tremendously on their violence and the number of people who actually were sent back to prison. You would do the same thing in our schools. And they did these experiments on hundreds of thousands of children with adequate nutrition and vitamin supplements, and their learning went up, and certainly they got away from junk food. These kids did so much better. And so what happened when the study was over? It went right back to the same things before. They know what to do. They're not doing it. But, of course, we always have a drug to solve every problem, don't we? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Dr. Jack Clooney. And Dr. Clooney certainly deals with a lot of people who have problems. And certainly the problems often can be taken care of without medication, by diet, by nutritional supplements. And so why did you sort of pick up the story there? We're talking about some of these drugs that recently now are being pulled off of the distribution because of the disastrous side effects, and yet a lot of these children really can, or even adults with these various problems, can be helped with non-medical treatment, can't they, Jack?
Very definitely. I mean, if we look at the way the brain works, and we use things that enhance the choline uptake in the brain. Now, acetylcholine is a main nerve transmitter in the body, and particularly in the brain. And I tell this story that, you know, ADD is kind of like, you know, at the head of the train you have two locomotives. There are serotonin and dopamine. And if you look at a train, most trains have two locomotives, one pulling, one pushing. And so if we look at that scenario and consider acetylcholine to be the track that the train runs on, it's easy to imagine what happens to the train at 60 miles an hour when the track disappears. It doesn't derail initially, by the way. The ride just gets bumpy. And it's at that stage when kids have pressures that you and I didn't have when we went to school, stress loads that are adult-level stress loads in school. And we see the wearing away of certain parts of the human psyche. We put a good diet, and we recommend things like phosphatidylserine and other things, L-carnitine, to improve the way that the brain functions. And kids get better, and they get better right before their eyes. I mean, right before their parents' eyes. We have situation after situation. One local business leader, a 17-year-old daughter, well, she was 16 when we started dealing with her, and he went to a parent conference teachers meeting, teachers meeting a year later, and the teacher said, "Boy, this girl's been so much better since she's been on drugs." And he looked at her and he says, "Ma'am, she's never been on drugs. We just took somebody else's advice and not yours." So, you know, and one of the things, you know, we see ADD climbing. We see depression climbing in kids. We see psychotic behavior and suicide. And then when we get to the adult realm, we see more psychoses and more Alzheimer's. And whether it is the Alzheimer's on the one end of the spectrum or the increased ADD and autism on the other side of the spectrum, what is causing all of this problem? And, of course, in autism, it can be directly linked to the mercury preservative, which is 47% of the preservative by weight, 47% mercury in these immunizations.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment as we bring our stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Dr. Jack Clooney. And Dr. Clooney is a clinical psychologist who worked with these people for many years, and certainly with all the things and tools that the psychologists use, and then finally figured, hey, there's got to be something more than this. And so this really got him interested in nutrition and certainly the alternative approaches to help people who are having emotional problems. And of course, he's simply pointing out that certainly with autism, there's a very definite causal relationship between the mercury, the toxic doses of mercury that have been giving our children, and knowing full well the disastrous effects it would. And, of course, we could also mention that over 67% of the cities in this nation are now fluoridated. And when you put fluoride in the water, you increase the lead level. And these kids are getting toxic levels of lead. They know exactly what's going on, ladies and gentlemen. What happened recently was that the 7,000 employees of the Environmental Protection Agency, through their unions, I think there were 3 or 4 or 5 unions, petitioned the EPA to stop all water fluoridation because we were poisoning the people. Not a word of that in the media, except the October 24th Time magazine. I suggest you get that Time magazine, or you can get in touch with us, and we'll be glad to send you a copy of the article. 7,000 EPA employees, the people who are there to protect us from toxins, said there is no safe level of water fluoridation. And of course, when they fluoridate, they actually put not only fluoride but lead and arsenic in the water. That the level in the children, level blood level of the children, goes up to dangerous levels. They know this is happening. But they're harming our children. They know what's going on. But read that October 24th issue of Time magazine. It's an article, the only place I've seen this mentioned, in the controlled media. And so Dr. Clooney is simply pointing out that certainly the children are being poisoned with mercury, and I think the elderly are being poisoned. That's why they want everybody to get the influenza shot, because there are toxic doses of mercury in it. And aren't there too many elderly? And after all, they're not very productive anymore, and our whole social fabric is going to begin to unravel if these people keep living to 70 or 80 or 90 years old as they are in other countries. and they usually die very quickly after the Alzheimer's disease sets in. Could anything be this cruel and this crass? And I would like to suggest that it could. Pick up the story there, Jack.
Well, there's, you know, when we talk about the complexity of the drug industry, the only industry who's more immoral, if you will, would be the, and I don't think they're more immoral, but they're close, is the oil industries. And what happens here is that, you know, we have known for almost 25 years that mercury in vaccinations causes a problem. We've known for over 10 years that there's a direct connection between autism and vaccinations. And that doesn't mean that every child that is vaccinated is going to be autistic. But look at the amount of autism, look at the increase in autism over the last 10, 15 years. It's remarkable. And at the same time, ADD is climbing, ADHD is almost out of control. The adult-oriented dementias, the lack of short-term memory in 30 to 40-year-old people. And first question, do I ask? I said, do you drink Diet Pop? And a large amount of them drink, you know, excessive, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 cans of pop. One pastor friend of mine drinks 8 a day, and he's got 3 sets of notes, sometimes 4 sets of notes on Sunday, distributed around the platform so he doesn't forget his sermon. And a young man in his mid-30s, and I try to convince him. I said, look at the Arizona State University, not Arizona State, but University of Arizona study on aspartame.
That's NutraSweet that they have in the Diet Cokes.
That's
in
correct.
And they've had, I don't know if they've taken out a Diet Pepsi, but it's been there until recently anyway.
Well, it's in most diet products, and it's dangerous stuff. It lodges, it's stored in the brain and stored in the liver, and you know it turns to formaldehyde at 86.6 degrees. Our body's core temperature is about 103. So you know it's not hard to figure out that Diet Pop, whether it's in your gut or whether it's in your garage, is doing the same thing. It's converting to wood alcohol.
Right. And of course, it's also there. There's aspartic acid in it. There's phenylalanine. And, of course, there's the methanol, which turns into formaldehyde. Why are they putting that in? They know it's toxic for 15 years. Why? The FDA officials tried to keep it out of our food because they knew how dangerous it was. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening, Dr. Jack Clooney. And Dr. Clooney is talking about the danger of the aspartame that is in the Diet Coke and other diet drinks people are drinking. It produces pathological obesity. And so have you ever noticed how so many people who drink all of these Diet Cokes are fat people? Why do you think fat people are drinking it? Well, because they're getting fat from it. And they know in animal studies it produces pathological obesity, but the last thing they want for the American people is to realize that we've licensed a deadly poison, and we put it in our food, we put it into dry diet drinks. And they know exactly what's going on. And I think it was New Mexico or one of the other states recently passed a resolution to outlaw it in the states. Of course, you're not going to hear about this anywhere in the country. The last thing they want the American people to know is that they're poisoning, they're being poisoned, with the full support of our Federal Drug Administration. So pick up the story.
Well, the Food and Drug Administration, of course, is probably, in my opinion, the biggest source of graft in Washington. Congress, I think, runs quite second. But the there in Washington, D.C., now I visit Washington quite a bit, And in Washington, D.C., there is, for every member of Congress, 380-some members of the House, 50 members of the Senate. For every member of the House and every member of the Senate, there is more lobbyists in Washington than one for one. Some estimate that when you figure the congressmen and figure the senators, figure their staffs, there's 2,000 people, 3,000 people. There are more people representing the drug industry lobbying in Washington, in the Capitol, than each member of the House of Representatives and Senate combined.
I think there are 453 congressmen and 100 senators, so that's altogether about 543,
right,
or somewhere in there. People, and of course, it's the thousands of lobbyists there, all being paid high salaries to influence legislation.
That's right, absolutely right. And the drug companies pay these people a minimum of $100,000 a year, and that's on the low side, to do their work in Washington for them. Now, anybody who believes that the drug companies are out for our best interest needs to examine their morality a little closer. When we look at and we see what happened in the early 60s.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Dr. Jack Clooney, and we're simply talking about what goes on in Washington, D.C., and the lobbyists that are there to actually influence the members of Congress to go along with their program, and especially if they're coming from the drug companies, then the congressman will call the FDA and say, hey, lay off this or lay off that or the other thing, and they will put pressure then on the FDA officials, and the FDA officials, many of them, some of them have stock in the companies, that others are certainly are looking forward to retirement from government service and then going to work for the drug companies. And unfortunately, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone. That's a little takeoff on what Lord Acton said. He said, absolute power corrupts absolutely, but, one of the senators actually I had in my studio not too long ago, the retired senator from Alaska, and he said, absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone, talking about Washington, D.C.
Right.
Go ahead.
Well, and when we see what's happening in Washington, you know, little things, if you're following this closely, things like thalidomide that cause such gross malfunctions of human development and deformations of children, short arms, no fingers, hideous type of deformations and limbs. And this drug is now approved again. Different purpose, different things, but it's now approved by the FDA to be used in the United States for something else.
It's being used, I think, for the treatment of AIDS.
Yes.
But, you know, of course, it was the fact that women were taking this, I think it was a sleeping pill, and that's when you had all these children with these horrible and grotesque deformities.
Right. So, you know, these drugs just make the cycle. It is the object, I believe wholeheartedly, that it's the object of the American government to make sure that the drug companies are successful and that they're profitable.
And I think that's really so beautifully pointed out in this latest, I think, $7 billion appropriation President Bush is trying to get through to protect us from the bird flu, so we won't all die of bird flu. And in that, of course, there's some money for buying Tamiflu. Of course, the man who will benefit the most from that would be Donald Rumsfeld. He was a former CEO of Gilead that developed Tamiflu, and he held a lot of that stock. George Shultz does the same thing, former Secretary of State, the man who was instrumental in picking George Bush to be the president. And but the other thing that's in that legislation is very interesting. They want an inclusion there that will say that the drug companies, the vaccine manufacturers, cannot be sued if they put out a faulty product that's going to kill, cripple, or disable people. Now, why would they want to do that? Well, they say, my goodness, they're not going to make the vaccines unless they're protected from liability and from being sued. But would you really want to, you know, actually take a product that the company really didn't have any faith in?
Oh, absolutely not. You know, the, you know, of course, the drug companies are their number one advocate. And what really flips my switch, Dan, is the amount of drugs that are being used in kids. Now, I've in my office as a counselor, I have seen kids on Ritalin. At the same time, they're on Holodol, which is an antipsychotic. They're on other drugs, and to quiet them down. Now, kids are kids. I mean, I have a 9-year-old grandchild that most of the time is a well-mannered, well-acting child, but every once in a while he gets wound up like an 8-day clock, and that's what kids do. They go through these cycles, you know, and most of the time, of course, you know, parents are to blame for this, but most of the time when a child acts up, he's just looking for attention. So get down on the floor and play with them. Don't drug the child. And we're finding a tremendous amount of psychotic behavior. This Unabomber type of thing. These kids that went through this high school, this Columbine High School in California.
Colorado.
Yeah, Colorado. All were on different types of psychotropic medication. And we can follow this through the whole country. And we monitor the amount of violent behavior, we monitor the amount of drug behavior or illegal behavior, violent behavior, that type of thing. And we look at one thing. Are they on psychotropic drug? The majority of them are.
Any of the Ritalin or Luvav, or is, I think that was what Kleibold was on, and or either Harris or Kleibold. And then, of course, the Prozac and Prozac drugs. Jack, before we go on, I want you to get your telephone number and your website out, because if you have questions, you can always call Dr. Clooney, and he'll certainly get back to you and make some suggestions. And this is what he does. He helps people in his area, and he has a clinic there. But anyway, go ahead and get your telephone number out, and, of course, get your website out again.
Well,
please.
People can reach us at 888-266-1043. 888-266-1043, or our website is healthsourceinc.com. And there's a place on there you can email me. Now, I will tell you that I'm a busy guy, and it might take me a day or two to get to you. On the other hand, I may answer the phone. So, you know, but if I don't answer the phone, if I'm not available, I'll certainly get back to you, but it might take me a day or two.
All right, that's healthsourceinc.com, healthsourceinc.com, or 888-266-1043. And certainly, Dr. Clooney's been studying these things for a long time, and there's so many problems that people have out there that if we go along with the traditional treatments, if we, for instance, you're elderly, and you do what you're told to do, and you take your influenza shot, because if you don't take your influenza shot, you're going to die. First, you have to understand, if you're elderly, you have a very poor immune system. And what you need to do is build up your immune system. You don't want to be taking an influenza shot, because it probably won't do any good. First of all, it's be for the wrong organism, number one. And secondly, you do not have the capacity to mount an immune response. You want to build up your immune system, not take the influenza shot. And the great problem is, that, according to Dr. One of the researchers who's been doing this for a long time, will be glad to send some material from his website if you'd like to check this out. If you take that influenza shot, three or four of them over a 5-year period, but between age 60 and 65, 10 years down the line, your incidence of Alzheimer's goes up 1,000%. Why would they be telling people to do that? Unless, of course, there is a genocidal agenda. And believe me, what we're saying is well known. We'll be glad to send you the information. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Or do you have that information available for people, Jack?
Not yet.
All right, we'll be glad to, of course, email you that or actually send you a copy.
Email it to me. I'll post it on my website.
Okay, fine. And I think it's so important that we get this information out so people know where they can actually go to verify these facts. Because if it's really true, why are they advocating the influenza shot for the elderly people? What we need to do is build up their immune system, and there are lots of ways to build up immunity. But don't give them a shot, because if they don't have an immune system, it's not going to do any good anyway, will it?
No, definitely. You know, immune system, you know, there's so many things that we can build the immune system with that are completely natural. The mushrooms that the Chinese have been using for years. We have people here who use mushroom extracts year-round, and they never get sick. I mean, their offices, this is the state capital, their offices are right next to these little cubicles, are right next to other people who are getting sick, and all of a sudden this person goes to work Monday morning, and he or she is the only one there. And, you know, it's just, you know, if you don't take care of your immune system will not take care of you. It is something that we usually ignore. We take our health for granted, and we ought not to do that.
It's like that old saying they used to say, if you're not true to your teeth, why, they'll be false to you. But
that's right.
If you don't look after your immune system, you're
that's
in real
right.
trouble. And, of course, if you do build up your immune system, and there are lots of ways to do it, and we've talked about that many times, why, you're going to be in real trouble. That website, of course, is Dr. Fudenberg, F-U-D-E-N-B-E-R-G. He's 80 years old, the dean of vaccinologists in this country. And his website posts there an abstract of an article he's written, pointing at the 1,000% increase in the incidence of Alzheimer's disease. This is criminal, but then why should we be surprised that the CDC is pushing this? After all, they're pushing water fluoridation, knowing full well that all 7,000 employees there, at least when the working group at the Environmental Protection Agency has said, stop water fluoridation, you're poisoning the people. And the CDC, which of course is the Center for Disease, a cover-up. The CDC is saying, oh, everybody's got to have fluoridated water, so they'll have a pretty smile. Of course, they won't be able to, you know, they won't live as long. It's going to produce cancers and lower their intelligence and lower certainly their fertility rates and, of course, make their bones soft. But we want you to have a pretty smile.
Now, Stan, is this the October 14th issue?
October 24th.
October 24th.
And
okay.
We'll be glad to send you a copy of that, too. I don't get it to you, remind me, but we'll send you the abstract from Dr. Fudenberg's page, as well as that article, and we do have the copy of Marcia Angel's book is on the way to you, The Truth About the Drug Companies, which everybody should read. I mean, here's the woman, the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine at Harvard University, and she won't even answer emails now. They've done a real trip on her.
Yeah. Well, it's a shame. You know, what we have come across in this country is the good people are being silenced, and they're being threatened. And I know when I first opened my clinic here or my center here in Springfield, I received several death threats. Now at that point, nobody knew me. But I received several death threats on my stand with ADD. So they don't happen as often because I'm more well known and I'm more accepted by some doctors, not all. But the terrible thing is that when people speak the truth, they usually get penalized for it.
And of course, basically, you are sort of a consultant on nutrition for a lot of the physicians there, aren't you?
Yes. Yes. Hardly a day goes by that we don't get a physician call or referral from a physician. Just got one today. Instead of giving the child, a 16-year-old with acne, instead of giving them the drug of choice,
I mean, the Accutane, the one that creates all the sorts of congenital abnormalities.
Right. Instead of giving them the Accutane, she sends them to me. Now, I applaud that, you know, and I think we can help them. You know, we just put up a new article on ADD on our website, not ADD, but acne, on our website that anybody can understand. And the important thing is that drugs are out there, and there are certain things you take them for and certain things you don't, and the ones you don't outnumber the ones you do. And, you know, this child has been on antibiotics since he was very, very young. And, I mean, you know, so much so that he's not having any symptoms. He can take antibiotics and not have diarrhea like the rest of us, and so on. So, you know, getting his system back squared away could be a chore. But, I believe we'll get it done.
Well, I'm sure there are lots of alternatives. Now, there's some medicines that are wonderful, and you know, if you are seriously ill, why, certainly the antibiotics can be life-saving, certainly, but doing orthopedic surgery, I wouldn't have wanted to do the big surgery we were doing without antibiotic coverage. Short-term antibiotics are really a wonderful thing, and there's so many of the old drugs, for instance, for the heart, the digitalis helps the heart. There are certain drugs that are wonderful, but there's so many of the new ones that have come on the market, especially these very expensive ones, that they don't want you to import from Canada. The same drug you can get up there for a third the price. Oh, my goodness.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, you know, and, of course, the justification is, well, you know, of course, Canada's not coming up with any new drugs at all. That's why they're so cheap up there, and the government controls the price. We have to have the money here so that the drug companies will have the money to do the research. The trouble is, they're not doing the research. They're not developing the new antibiotics. They haven't come up with a new antibiotic in I don't know how long. They're not doing these things. They want to get something like Vioxx or like these new psychotropic drugs, or, of course, like the statin drugs, which produce cancer and dementia and all sorts of complications, and they do lower your cholesterol. They do it very effectively. They do it by poisoning your liver.
Right? That's right.
But if you, any of our listeners out there, would like a copy of the physician's desk reference submitted by the manufacturer of Crestor. We'll be glad to send you that one page out of about three. We're in very, very small print. It says, has no effect on cardiac morbidity or cardiac mortality. In other words, it doesn't affect heart disease or death from heart disease. Well, if that's not going to affect heart disease or death from heart disease, why are you taking it and spending so much money to drive your cholesterol down when there are all sorts of complications you can get from too low cholesterol, including dementia, including cancer, including, in rare instances, rhabdomyolysis, which is a deadly disease. And if we're really not going to be helping people, could it possibly be that they've convinced the majority of the doctors in this country of something that just isn't true?
Well, I think that's where we are, my friend. And there are a few voices in the United States that will tell people the truth. You know, and I tell people, I said, look, if I can't show you, don't do it. And if I can't explain why I'm doing what I'm doing, don't do it.
Now, you do have some good articles up on your website on statins, too, don't you?
Oh, yes, for sure.
And you need to get the old, look at the scientific studies. Don't listen to what the doctor, because the doctor's being told by the detail man what these studies show. Look at the studies, look at the conclusions. And there have certainly been a number of very, very well-versed physicians and experts who've said, this is a scam. But they're not the ones you're going to read about in your newspaper, because
right. After
all, the newspapers are part of this conglomerate. They get big bucks from the drug companies. The drug companies are the biggest advertisers in medical journals. How often do you turn on your television and you see these drug companies advertised? But do you really think that the media that is subsidized by the drug companies is going to tell you the truth? And if they did tell you the truth, do you think they'd still get the advertising? We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program. It may not be very nice, but you better hear the truth, because it may be your life or the life of a loved one that's at stake. Well, Zach, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Well, Stan, what I'd like your listeners to understand is that we're not enemies of the medical profession. You're a medical doctor. I'm a PhD. There are good things. Doctors are good people, and they save lives every day. And very frankly, I wouldn't be here if it hadn't been for good medical care. But on the other hand, drugs are being used when something else could be used. And common sense is what I'd like to challenge everybody to live by. And if they read the package insert for the drug, or look it up in the PDR, there are other ways, go on the internet and look it up, you'll find that some of these drugs do not have a good record, and that the side effects, the ones that they speed up during the commercials, are deadly. And it's a matter that people should understand, and particularly in the ADD, in the psychotropic area, and certain things that we do or don't do today can cause us problems when we're older. And many of these problems, through good nutrition, can be taken care of. I would certainly enjoy phone calls at 888-266-1043 or on our website at healthsourceinc.com and answer your questions. We've got material here that we can send you. We have product, but we've got a lot of information. And very soon, you can buy a lot of stuff on the internet on our website now, but very soon you'll be able to buy anything that we carry here. So, you know, I would encourage your people to think twice before taking serious drugs. You know, if they've got pneumonia and they're spitting up green mucus, then by all means, take an antibiotic. Do it with common sense. And understand that if you don't take care of your health, nobody will.
And, of course, the thing is that our plea to you is get educated. Because if you're not educated and you're dependent on somebody else, you're actually risking your life. It's your responsibility. It's nobody else's responsibility. And many times the doctors are not going to hear some of the things you're talking about here. But we want you to get the facts. And you can get them from Dr. Clooney's website or here at Radio Liberty. And we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. And once again, Jack, let's get your website and your telephone number off before we let you go.
Telephone number is 888-266-1043.
All right, and your 866-266-1043, and your website is?
Yep, and the website is healthsourceinc.com.
Okay, that's healthsource.
888-266-1043.
God bless. Thanks very much, Jack.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. And, of course, if the things we've been talking about this evening, books like Marcia Angel's The Truth About the Drug Companies. If you need more information about anything at all, of course, you can go to our website at radioliberty.com. Information on statin drugs. If any of you would like a free copy of that article by Dr. Fudenberg, we're talking about the what happens as far as the influenza shots are concerned for the elderly. If you'd like a free copy of Dr. Graham's testimony, we do offer that. That's our April newsletter. You have to specify which ones you want. That is our April newsletter, and just give us a call and ask for Dr. Graham's newsletter at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or if you have access to the Internet, you can go up on the Internet and go to radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And you can pull down the April newsletter. Of course, you can also listen to our programs 5 hours a day on the Internet, either directly or indirectly. And you won't get much accomplished, but you'll sure get a lot of knowledge that you're not going to get from ABC, CBS, or NBC. And certainly, then, of course, we hope that you'll pull down our newsletters and go back and read them back through the years. There's a lot of information there on all sorts of subjects. If you would like to know about the oil scam, and it is a scam, as far as we're really running out of oil, why, of course, our latest newsletter is Peak Oil, too. And it gives you the background of how we got into the mess we are today And you will, of course, hear, meet some of the people who've been testifying up there before about the United States Senate, some of those people. Those names are very, very familiar to me as we've researched this whole scam. If you'd like a copy of our latest newsletter, Peak Oil 2, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or the first of the week, why that newsletter will be published on our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. We do mention that we are having an all-day seminar here in the Monterey Bay area. And that is going to be on the 19th of November. Now, we have to have our reservations in this week because soon we're serving lunch. We have to know how many are going to be there. So we're cutting off certainly on Friday, or actually on Saturday. No reservations after Saturday. But we're bringing in speakers from Illinois. We're going to bring in Dr. David Ayoub. And he's a full-time, or I should say part-time radiologist, who is trying to figure out why it is that people, multi-billionaires, are so interested in population control on one hand and worldwide vaccination with the other. You would think if you wanted population control and to reduce the number of people in the world, you wouldn't be trying to save lives, or is there another agenda? And then, of course, D.V. Kidd will be here. We'll have Brad Dacus. I'll be speaking on several different subjects, which I hope you'll find fascinating. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty. And you want verification of anything we've said tonight, our number, 1-800-544-8927. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, this evening we have with us Dr. John Martin, who I've had the privilege of knowing for some years. At one time he was a professor down at USC in the medical school there. He was in charge of the laboratory at the at Los Angeles County Hospital, which was one of the largest county hospitals in the country, one of the largest laboratories. And Dr. Martin, of course, noticed there were people coming in with strange illnesses, and these people would die many times, and they would have changes in their brain and body, but they wouldn't have any conventional infections at all. In other words, there was some sort of an inflammatory process, but nobody could figure what it was. And so Dr. Martin began studying the monkey cytomegalic viruses. Now, you'll have to remember that when they started the massive immunization program here in the United States for polio back in the 1950s, why we were all received there, our polio vaccine that was grown in the kidney of the cultures of the rhesus monkey. The only trouble was there was a cancer virus in that, a simian virus, and so we infected most of the people with the simian virus in the country, but we couldn't let the American people. We'd know we'd given them a cancer virus. And so then they switched over to the green monkey to grow the polio virus. The only trouble was that the green monkey had a cytomegalic virus in it. And I'm going to let Dr. Martin pick up the story from there. Dr. Martin, thank you so very much for being with us.
Yeah, good evening, Stan, and thank you very much for the summary and acknowledging that it's been a long journey since way back in 1990, I guess, when we first saw a brain biopsy from a patient, and by molecular techniques there was a virus, but as you said, looking for the normal hallmark of an infection, looking for an inflammatory reaction, there was none to be seen. And this led to the realization that our immune system doesn't always respond to viruses. I thought once we started to characterize some of these viruses and showed that some of them did have a linkage to the monkeys used to make polio vaccine, that would have provoked this response, gee, we better look into this, it's a major public health concern. Instead of that, there was a reaction of, no, we don't want to go there, let's put this research on the side. What I'm very happy, having spoke to you a little while ago, to kind of bring you and some of your listeners up to date on the obvious conclusion from this type of research. And again, it took a long time for the pennies to drop on my end, but even then, we have viruses that the immune system is not very good at seeing.
All right, we're going to have to ask you to hold that thought for just a moment here. We're going to have to, of course, take a quick break, and as soon as we get back, why, we'll continue this fascinating discussion. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go right ahead there, please, and pick up the story.
Yeah, okay. So basically, the bottom line is that since the immune system wasn't providing the protection, there must be some alternate mechanism, some auxiliary system, something outside of the immune system that was able to provide some protection against these viruses. We've now seen patients for, golly, 15 years whom we first cultured viruses from and have followed their histories. Bad periods, other periods where they seem to get some recovery. So we basically have had a real good indication of there being some resistance.
Hold that thought there.
Yep.
All right, Dr. Martin is just saying that they've studied some of these patients for long periods of time who have been ill, and then they seem to have recovered somewhat. So they seem to have the capacity to recover from these chronic illnesses that are related to what he refers to as stealth viruses, and they're really the monkey cytomegalic viruses that so many people were infected with when we got the original polio vaccine. So please pick up the story there, Dr. Martin.
Uh-huh. So the optimism, I mean, the doom and gloom of everybody having viruses wasn't really very encouraging. What did become encouraging when we realized the very simple explanation for the observation that I was able to culture these viruses in test tubes, have various colleagues try to repeat it under instructions. They could do it well, and very strong confirmation. But in most laboratories, the difficulty was that the cultures would show this cell-damaging effect, but then the cultures would repair themselves. and what was seemingly a positive culture all of a sudden became negative. As this work went on, as we looked at brain biopsies from some of the children who had it, we realized that the cells were coping with these infections by generating an alternative source of energy, and with that additional cellular energy, the cell was able to cope with, recover from the viral illness. Again, this is way outside the normal sense of mainstream medicine and in much of the community, which really attributes all of the resistance to infection to the immune system. As you well know, our immune system, the way we define it, only began in evolutionary terms with the early vertebrates. And again, it's easy now to see it in retrospect. It didn't come so immediate, but there must be a resistance mechanism that preceded our immune system. It probably operates in insects, plants, and so it was encouraging to go back to organic farmers and see that they were using products in farm cultivation that were not too different and overall similar to what we were seeing produced in these cultures that was providing that repair process.
In other words, what you're saying is that there is a non-immunological ability to, really on an intracellular response to infection, independent of the immune system, which we ordinarily associate with the antibody or antigen-antibody and the cellular response. Is that right?
Absolutely. And
hold that thought. We're going to have to just bring our stations on board right now. Well, Dr. Stan, and what Dr. Martin is really bringing up, which is really so fascinating, is that he hypothesizes that there are other immune responses. Now, ordinarily, when you go to medical school, you learn about the cellular response and how you get this cellular immunity, and the white cells come, and the lymphocytes come, and they gobble up the infections. And then we have the humoral response, the antigen-antibody response, that mobilizes the immune system. But Dr. Martin is hypothesizing that there is a cellular response that is independent from these other forms of immunity. So please pick up the story there.
Okay, and then again, without becoming too basic, but the nice thing about science is it all of a sudden opens up flaws, if you want, or limitations in our thinking. The textbooks would have that the only source of net energy coming into life forms is through the process called photosynthesis by plants, where the chlorophyll in plants capture a very small part of the total energy from the sun in the part that we actually see, and convert that or use that energy to bring carbon dioxide with water to make glucose. The fallacy of that is clearly one: it doesn't explain where nature had the energy to make chlorophyll in the first place. But secondly, it really doesn't do much credit to the whole sense of biology that only that very small portion of sunlight energy would be used to feed life forms. What we've found instead is that there are mineral complexes, mineral linked to organic materials, that act when as a broad complex, like a lattice of these molecules, and they can absorb a whole lot of different types of energy, different parts of the sunlight, sound energy, undergo a kind of vibrational charge and convert that energy into a bioenergy.
Well, that's really very interesting, because increasingly we're hearing people talking about music and how actually you can play certain types of music around plants and they'll just die, and you can play other types of music around plants and they will thrive. And what you're really saying is that even they have somehow then a capacity, a molecular capacity, to respond to certain rhythms and music?
Well, it's even nicer. As you know, I'm pretty conservative, you might say slow, in coming to conclusions, if it were, about stealth-adapted viruses and so forth. But we can now make these, what we're calling, alternate cellular energy pigments, or these structures, put them in front of a speaker, and as you said, play Tibetan chant music, Indian rub music, various other frequencies and demonstrate the resonance that they can show the vibrational type activity. On a more scientific way, we can show that these materials can donate electrons. They basically have the same property that we associate with chlorophyll. So it does all of a sudden open up a whole approach to how to proceed with therapy, not only for stealth-adapted viral infections, but generally for wellness. And it sort of is a nice distinction between this energy approach and the typical pharmaceutical approach, in that we are really potentially tackling all types of diseases. Also, we have now an explanation to help those many practitioners who have stuck with alternative complementary medicine, different energy type approaches, Dr. Reif, Dr. Edgar Cayce. Many people in the past have actually come to the same conclusion, that there's something beyond the pharmaceutical approach. Broad-based energy delivery systems can help people when they're sick. And some of their observations have been quite spectacular in terms of cancers disappearing, people all of a sudden getting well with an energy transfer.
Well, that's for our listeners out there. Let's tell them perhaps a little bit about these stealth infections, because this was something that really came as quite a revelation, that here we have people infected with cytomegalic viruses, monkey viruses, that, and of course they do not create the typical immune response or inflammatory response in the individual. But some of these people, I know with your work when you were there at the University of Southern California, and they're controlling the lab there at Los Angeles County Hospital, people were coming in and actually dying with these things, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely. And again, the whole range of patients, and as you said, those brought in by ambulance, having essentially been unconscious, and other people having more mild type illnesses, many people in emergency room, challenging their clinicians, whether they're a psychiatric patient and to go in a psych ward, or a neurology patient. And we've seen patients in both types of wards. When we've taken blood or the fluid around the brain, we can culture these atypical viruses.
And actually, Chris, you've been able then to develop techniques for culturing these atypical viruses, and you've even found them when you've actually examined the blood from blood transfusion banks. Isn't there a significant number of this, even in the offspring of the people who originally got the infections when they took the polio vaccine?
Well, absolutely. And the other point, Stan, it's now the horse is out of the barn. These viruses can pass one person to another. We've documented so many families now where one member gets sick and then somebody else in the family will come up with a illness, all attributed to these viruses, and then the children will get it. And I could give, you know, long details of this, but it's just so painful to see the disintegration of these families with what we're generally calling family illnesses of presumptive infectious origin.
Well, now, of course, this would some of these be cases that people might call a chronic fatigue type of illness?
All the way through. I mean, there's one family that does come to mind where it was a 65-year-old successful banking executive who became sick. He's had every diagnosis in a sense of the neurological one, now Alzheimer's, but before that Parkinson's, before that there was too much pressure in his fluid about his brain, they had to put a shunt in. His wife devoted herself to care for him until she got sick, and she too has had a whole series of diagnoses. Their daughter invited them to come and stay with her and her husband. They started to renovate the house to accommodate their parents coming in, but before too long, they got sick. She is more like the chronic fatigue syndrome, but she also had that now fiber disease. Some people call it Morgellons. But her husband is confidently diagnosed by major medical centers as having amyotrophic lateral sclerosis.
So it manifests itself then, manifests itself in many ways, either as progressive neurological disease, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, or ALS, commonly known to our the public as Lou Gehrig's disease. So,
and in that same family, just because the real emphasis and the public health tragedy, there were four children. One had left school and had the same headaches and muscle weakness that his father was having. But the three who were in school were A students, sporting, and then one by one coming down with diseases. One was had very low platelets, thrombocytopenia. Another one, hair was just falling out, almost bald spots, developing. All this kind of complexity, but underlying it all, they just couldn't cope with schooling. They couldn't learn anymore. The mother had to bring them out for homeschooling. And that whole family, again, together with some additional relatives, are all totally now ill because of this kind of viral illness.
And, of course, basically there are over 2 million people in America with this chronic fatigue fibromyalgia syndrome. And I will tell you that the CDC is doing everything they can not to find out what's going on. And if you, we used to carry a wonderful book called Osler's Web by Hillary Johnson. You can probably get it off of Amazon. We don't have any more copies of it. But it was fascinating as you read that book to find out the lengths that the people in government would go to suppress research. And Congress would be, keep appropriating money for the research, and the Centers for Disease Cover-Up would do everything they could to discourage it and to say, all these people are crazy. That's all it is. They're just plain crazy. And they would not allow and they would not finance the research. So, Dr. Martin, is there anything that can be done effectively to help these tragic people, at least those that, that have this chronic fatigue syndrome referable to the these stealth virus infections?
Oh, look, again, that's why I was happy to come on your show. It's not here yet, but the idea of this alternate cellular energy pathway activating through that is clearly in my mind now. Is going to provide the answer to people afflicted with these diseases. And you're absolutely correct that the CDC has been slow. If we have time, if you want, I'm very happy to tell you of an individual who actually sent his blood as if he was a monkey, and the laboratory result came back infected with monkey cytomegalovirus. But again, CDC is kind of not overly enthusiastic to pursue with the vigor.
Well, think of the implications if the American people realize that we had been infected, first of all, with a cancer virus, the simian virus 40, and then the, to correct that, they changed the monkey that they were using to grow the poliovirus in, and they changed from the rhesus monkey to the green monkey, and that had all the cytomegalic viruses in it, and they infected us with that. Would we ever trust them again? And I would like to suggest that they cannot let the American people know what's going on. There's been a conscience cover-up going back well over 50 years. This wonderful book, The Virus and the Vaccine, goes into the SV40, and perhaps someday Dr. Martin will write a book on the next step. And that was the cytomegalic virus that so many people tragically have now, passing from one generation to the next and within families. Over 2 million people have chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia in America. And, of course, who knows who could be next. Well, Dr. Martin, certainly are you at the present time working on trying to develop these alternative energy sources, resources?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Again, very happy to let your listeners know. It's hard to do research on chronic fatigue syndrome. It's hard to do research in this country with FDA putting a lot of roadblocks against an approach that's considered a drug approach. So we've had a couple of successes this year. One with a colleague, Dr. John Stoneburner, herpes infections, which are very common, both oral and genital, and it's not a stealth-adapted virus, but a regular herpes simplex virus. Shingles is a herpes zoster virus, and genital warts is another painful, disturbing condition caused by a human papillomavirus. we were able to do the studies with so-called IRB approval and so forth, ensure that just activating these alternate cellular energy pigments in the vicinity of the lesion, they would regress. And though we didn't yet, we have yet to publish the second series of data results, the likelihood of coming back with a recurrence is markedly reduced. So that study was done. I'm proud of another study done in El Salvador. You well know that people in developing countries have very high mortality rates. The second major cause of death of children under 5 years of age is from diarrhea. When they come into hospital, the diarrhea doesn't go away, they become malnourished and die. A study was done there, a very good study. Over 100 children were randomized, and half of them received one of these energy supplements. As a group, that group, diarrhea ceased, and they recovered with no abdominal pain, much less dehydration, other signs.
Now, is this something you take by mouth in the way of a pill?
Yeah, this can be taken by mouth. Though we're trying again to fit in with FDA. I mean, I communicate with FDA a fair bit, and it's a matter of having to conform with everything as appropriate. But if we can use it on through the skin, that's going to be easier than by mouth.
You're talking about transdermal now, then?
Yeah, easier by intramuscular injection. The actual study in El Salvador did involve intramuscular injection. A relatively small amount, half a teaspoonful, of very safe product. I mean, if I say that using 3 mLs, in other studies, people can take 50 times that, 150 mLs intravenously, and have no side effects. But as a group, it really is one of the few studies that you can point to where a orthodox medicine-type clinical trial was conducted, and it was sufficiently randomized that the results are unequivocal that the children who received this energy product did recover much, much faster than the control groups who just had the typical United Nations-approved protocol. And that science will be presented at a mainstream conference in December, the American Society of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene. So it's sort of encouraging.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Dr. John Martin, formerly a professor at the University of Southern California, has been working on these stealth viruses for many years, and certainly he's pointing out that in some experimental studies that have been done in El Salvador, with these children with diarrhea, and in many of the developing countries, why diarrhea is a lethal disease. They do not have the medical facilities here in the United States. Why we put the child with the intense diarrhea in the hospital, we hydrate them, that we maintain their electrolytes, maintain their fluid balance until the diarrhea has subsided, but they just don't have the facilities in other countries, and many times these small children die. Well, of course, Dr. Martin is saying that they've done some studies down there with intramuscular injections, and a lot of the incidence of recovery has really been rather dramatic, hasn't it, Dr. Martin?
No, absolutely. And to put it in perspective, a very conservative estimate, and looking at the countries where figures are actually maintained, one can identify at least 10,000 deaths of children under 5 years of age every day. Every day, it's like, wow, another 10,000, another 10,000. So we're hoping to take this information to the United Nations and, as it were, hold those people up to that standard of, well, there's a lot of talk about wanting to do something about tropical diseases and this very high childhood mortality rate that's occurring. Here's the type of approach that you can take. The challenge is that it really goes against the sort of pharmaceutical model. It's not a single drug for a single disease. And in fact, what we're doing at the moment is showing and documenting that the same protocol will help children coming in with pneumonias and lung disease.
And basically what you're doing then is trying to stimulate this this non-cellular, non-hormonal immune response, which you feel has been there, a very, very primitive sort of response. But certainly if you can mobilize that, why, of course, the body, then the individual cell can combat the disease. Would that be a fair statement?
No, but you're right on target. But the proof of it is that we can boost plant growth with the same type of materials and so forth. So it does have a nice refreshing sense to it of the panacea, if you want, of just broadly energizing. Now, clearly it's not the only answer, and it doesn't say that specific therapeutic agents are not going to be useful in certain circumstances, but certainly as a first line of defense, I think it's proving itself in this rigorous type clinical testing, and it does warrant further testing in patients who have the, if you want, more mild in a general sense, but persisting infections described in this country, as you said, as chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia. And I may as well mention it, these stealth-adapted viruses can be really pretty tricky in the way that they can pick up bacterial sequences. Very easy to misdiagnose patients with these stealth-adapted viruses as having chronic Lyme disease, nowadays the Morgellon syndrome, a whole lot of sort of looking at the same elephant, as it were, but a different part, giving a different name.
Well, you mentioned earlier that the research that was done by a fellow named Roy Reif many years ago, Dr. Reif, developed a machine that would actually treat people with different frequencies, electrical frequencies, and during the 40s and 50s, this was quite accepted, and apparently he was having excellent results, until the government clamped down on him, and of course, with so many very effective treatments, they were effectively suppressed here in the United States. Do you think that Dr. Reif was actually able to help people with by generating frequencies, and these frequencies would be specific for specific diseases?
Yeah, not really. I mean, I've actually followed his work a lot and had the benefit of listening to many, many interviews and looking at the work. I think the difficulty, without a framework and understanding of how it was proceeding, it's too hard to stay on focus and continue to get consistent, positive, reliable results. But the basic concept of saying that if you put energy into the body, you can enhance this alternate energy pathway is very valid. And I think the successes that people like Dr. Reif saw could be explained by that alternate pathway, since he didn't have that in a sort of a fixed understanding. I don't think that the results were consistent, nor do I think that many of the people currently proposing life technologies are really certain as to how they're proceeding, how they should proceed. Once we put these alternate pigments in front of these lamps, I think we'll be able to tune the lamps to make them more specific and more effective.
All right, you hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Dr. John Martin here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and certainly our guest this evening is Dr. John Martin, a formerly professor at USC, and you have both a PhD and an MD, don't you, Doctor?
Yes, yes.
And you're from Australia, as I remember.
Yes, absolutely.
Right, and so there are not too many of the people within the scientific field who have both a PhD and a medical degree, and so that certainly gave Dr. Martin an advantage over many of the other researchers. Now, the difficulty is we have so many people in America. We've already mentioned the 2 million people with chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia. It's estimated there are another million people out there with Lyme disease, and many of these people will have the Borrelia infection, but they'll have so many other infections superimposed upon that. So something's really wrong with their immune system, and the body is just not able to take care of it. And these people are sort of derelicts from society. I talked to one this morning. He's a pharmacist, and he is ill, and other people in his family are ill. And as he said to me, you know, I can function, but I just don't function very well. A constant battle with disease, and there's so many people in our society that way, but they're sort of forgotten. We sort of push them to one side. They go from specialist to specialist and from doctor to doctor looking for help. And, well, it's pretty hard to help them. I don't think that most doctors say, well, they've just got to be crazy, because nobody could have that many symptoms. And yet, a lot of these people are really very real, aren't they, Dr. Martin?
Well, we also have a bit of a reaction as I get to know these people, is to kind of encourage them a little bit by saying it could be worse, because, unfortunately, many of the people we come across, we see inside the institution, already with that label of schizophrenia, manic depressive illness, severe depression, or they no longer exist. In other words, suicide. So I think that there is a whole spectrum of severity of these illnesses, but at that low end, you really run into people who lose judgment. People become caught up in the criminal system because they don't have that ability to fully appreciate the consequences of their actions. The number of children who go on to learning disorders, behavioral disorders, really, it's an enormous tragedy in society.
And do you feel that then some people with neuropsychiatric disorders are actually victims of these chronic infections?
Oh, I could point out to you. Coming across case after case, whether it's physicians or so forth, who just lose that sort of control of their life.
Hold that thought right for just a moment here. Well, Dr. Stan and Dr. Martin is just talking about this whole spectrum of people, many of them diagnosed with neuropsychiatric disorders, depression or schizophrenia, and then those with all sorts of other physical manifestations whose lives are simply either wiped out or put on hold because of these chronic infections. And so you pick up the story there, Dr. Martin.
Well, again, we're talking about a very severe the problem in society, and again, it really goes back on that pharmaceutical overconfidence in the pharmaceutical approach. And yet, when it comes to these chronic psychiatric illnesses, as you said, chronic fatigue is part of that spectrum. The existing modalities of treatment have not worked at all, and a very large number of our the population are struggling. In fact, it's scary, and that's one, as you said, why we were asked not to do cultures a few years ago. As you said, when we look even at the blood supply, then there's very compelling evidence that at least 10% of units being donated into the blood supply are coming from patients infected with atypical viruses.
And, of course, the thing is that the Red Cross does not test for these atypical viruses, and so it's not only in the blood supply, it would be in the plasma and the gamma globulin. Well, certainly the methods that they used for sterilization, say for factor VIII or for gamma globulin, will that actually kill the virus?
Well, I was asked once whether Pulmonin would do it, but certainly what I can say is that none of those procedures were in place with the first Gulf War, and a very good argument can be made that Gulf War syndrome is, again, caused by these viruses. The recent discussions that occurred was not so much debating with somebody, but trying to emphasize the fact that looking at these diseases as having a viral cause would provoke much more response from the government than trying to ascribe Gulf War syndrome to depleted uranium or autism, is another major manifestation of these stealth viral infections, ascribing that to mercury and the vaccine, whatever those toxins might have an effect, it carries none of the huge, enormous implications of an infectious cause. I've been impressed, and I know these individuals, Dr. Tony Fauci and others, how rapidly the government was willing to mobilize its resources to deal with the possibility of a bird flu outbreak, something in the order of $7 billion to do that. If only one could get the message to them that there's going on already a much more pervasive infectious illness caused by these stealth-adapted viruses that needs to be addressed. And again, it's almost now must be the time to get that message through, because there is an approach to treatment through this alternate cellular energy pathway.
Well, do you think that perhaps diet in any way might could be a beneficial thing, at least a stopgap, or even working with these alternative pigment therapies? Can diet impact on these chronic illnesses?
And again, I think that we're kind of conceiving now that from food we can get the calories by burning them up within the mitochondria component of the cells, but the idea of the fresh food, the vibrational type activities of fresh food, is moving us into that same direction of alternate cellular energy. So people have reported changing their lifestyle, juicing fresh foods and so forth. I think we're basically uncovering the fact that in addition to the calories in food, you can have this alternate energy pathway. So the products we're working with are natural products. They're just having that. It's a nice model, a lattice, as it were, with minerals cross-linking these elements and providing like a physical force rather than a chemical force. Some of the time we'll kind of try to go through that, but it's a really nice distinction between biochemistry and what is appropriately called biophysics.
All right, well, we have a few minutes if you want to sort of get into that. That's your decision, because you know the subject far better than I do.
Well, I think the difficulty with pushing too much is people will come back and say, well, where can I get this product? What can I take? And that's... still is this sort of uphill battle of trying to go back to the FDA and say, look, I don't want to call it a drug. Please don't call it a drug. If you do that, you're going to take us through this long, long pathway. I lost that battle with that herpes treatment. And again, in spite of, I thought, pretty convincing arguments that here these things are working through a energy pathway, the decision comes back almost like, well, we have our friends in the pharmaceutical industry, you're going to have to jump through this and that loop. So I just a little bit hesitant to say the approach of providing alternate cellular energy is undoubtedly the way to go.
Now, of course, can't you call it a food substance, a food nutrient? And we do have the Delaney, I believe, the clause that, you know, they cannot regulate the food industry or nutritional supplements the way they do with the food. And, of course, when it comes to legalizing drugs, why, if you're not a big drug company with hundreds of millions of dollars, they're just not going to authorize that for you.
No, that's right. And so you're absolutely right. Food, cosmetics, I mean, there are certain areas that there. It certainly FDA regulates foods, but you're right. It's less barriers. The difficulty is that once you begin to link anything to a possible medical use, it then becomes definable as a drug. And even if it was water, take this water for this diabetes or something, it then can be classed as a drug. But look. I'm doing battle, as it were, with the bureaucracy of the FDA. I have worked there. The thing on our side is that, in reality, these are not evil folk. They're sort of under a lot of political pressure, but they too have children with learning disorders, autism, and so forth. They still are at risk themselves of coming down with illnesses, or their parents have Alzheimer's. So it's kind of, if I have a little bit of encouragement from these folks, you want to be a masochist, John, go ahead and be it. We want to go home, be with our family at 4:30. but keep up the good work. So it's sort of like there. What I'm happy to have used this time for is just to provide that conceptual jump from saying that there are viruses, self-adapted viruses that the immune system won't target. There's so much validation of that nowadays, but that doom and gloom kind of conclusion is now offset by saying, but there is, and the body has had, and these understanding these viruses has led to a better appreciation of an alternative cellular energy pathway which can be utilized and, as I said, has proven itself. And there's no reason that it doesn't, it does explain patients with hepatitis C becoming virus negative, patients with diabetes going off their insulin. So in theory, and if we can pursue it, it ought to become the frontline therapy for many of these diseases. And when that fails, then to look for the Vioxx, as it were, or interferon, ribavirin type alternate treatments.
What's so fascinating is this would be something that would not be disease specific, but it would be to help the whole physiological structure of the body. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, no, absolutely. And that's where the kind of the discussions with FDA is trying to do and sort of say, we're not a drug, we're something else. So that's fair. I would also mention, just again to, not so much support, but the FDA folk did go back and do us the courtesy of looking at the polio vaccines released in the 1970s and three of the eight vaccines that they could locate, three of the eight lots of vaccines they could locate, certainly has DNA of monkey cytomegalovirus. They fall back and say, well, we can't culture. And I say, but like, I could show you how to culture. I can culture for you. And then it comes back to this proprietary restriction. Sorry, John, we can't give it to you, and so forth. But they certainly have validated the existence of monkey cytomegalovirus DNA in the polio vaccines released in this country. And similar data has come out of England, where something like half of 90 lots of polio vaccines that were looked at have DNA of monkey cytomegalovirus.
And it would only be logical, after all, if you're growing the polio vaccine in a culture of the kidney of the green monkey, wouldn't you expect we'd pick up all the viruses that the monkey had, just as we picked up all the viruses that the rhesus monkey had, so we picked up all the viruses that a different species, the green monkey, had. But they're not about to tell us that. It really come forward. It's like getting your hand caught in a cookie jar when you've been taught not to be there. It would be very embarrassing for the Federal Drug Administration and for the entire, you know, hierarchy of our bureaucracy to admit that, gee, oh, shucks, we made a mistake and we contaminated a whole generation of people with these, not only one, but several different types of serious viruses.
Well, just again, because we've made the point many a time, that the study was done, the formal study was done in the in 1972, between the FDA and the manufacturer of polio vaccine, 11 monkeys were set aside to see if their kidney cultures would grow out any viruses. All of them grew out cytomegaloviruses, and the sort of position was taken, no, these vaccines are not causing any problems. We can slip this under the carpet, and any number of contingency report plans, and FDA wouldn't have the courage to stop us continuing to produce vaccines. So I think the embarrassment is there, and I've brought that up with FDA for many a time. It's just that nobody is really willing to lead the charge and say, yes, we have an obligation to test for these viruses. The position again with CDC is saying, well, nobody has confirmed what Martin did with culturing these viruses, but what they're really saying is, we don't want to attempt to confirm it lest we come up with a positive result. And when I did visit CDC, the answer is they're not going to give us any resources for doing that. I say, you're $7 billion, you can't do it. We're not game to do it until we get clearance from our bosses, and our bosses will only listen to when Congress directs them to it.
Well, do you have a website where people could get more information? And, of course, if there were things that we should draw our congressman's attention to, what would that be? But first of all, let's get your website up, and then what can people do to help you in your effort to get to the bottom of this?
So the website is S, the letter S, the number 3, and the word support, S3support.com.
All right. Now, S3Support, okay, .com.
Yeah, and that's the website, and that's, and we're kind of trying to keep that up to date and so forth. In terms of realistically, what the public can help with, I think an awareness that it's not all doom and gloom. There are these illnesses. There is a viral component. Stealth-adapted viruses is meant to be a broad, generic way of describing viruses that the immune system doesn't effectively recognize. Not all of them are monkey cytomegaloviruses, but that's the one that the public should draw attention to, because that surely came through polio vaccines. The issue essentially is to have the public notify, as it were, the congressmen or the senators or so forth, to have this issue looked at and not sidestepped by CDC. The other one is in a real good optimism. I think this alternate energy pathway carries an enormous amount of promise, and I'd love to see it spring up as a generic concept again. People in this country, overseas, would pursue with vigor, because that surely is going to be the treatment of that will most likely benefit the largest numbers of people. And I think the concepts are very straightforward. As you said, even regular food can have this alternate energy pathway. Some of the products we're looking at that organic farmers have used are really pretty impressive. And just a matter of not having too much resistance from the FDA in terms of making it too difficult. I have a strong reaction against the people saying, well, gee, can we invest in this? Can we make money? And I show them a photograph of a poor, malnourished, dehydrated child from El Salvador, and I say, do you really want to make money out of this type of child? And the same way, the autism communities, I mean, I can tell you how, not so much disheartening, but discouraging, I guess, to listen to prominent speakers at autism conferences getting standing ovations from parents, tears running down their eyes almost, as they present all this stuff that doesn't have much science behind it, not particularly valid, and then to see the same person caucusing with their friends 15 minutes later, 30 minutes later, how they can franchise their operation, how they can make money from this. And it's just sort of, if something growing up in Australia did for me, it said, wow, if you're a physician, you don't have to, as it were, make money out of other people's illnesses. So that's again where I think the idea of communicating, and that's what you're very good at, but communicating to people, have those people communicate, amplify the message that, yeah, there's something good can be done, and that sort of a level of encouragement for, as you said, many, many people in this country who are laboring under chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and particularly the children with their behavioral problems, learning disorders.
And I think the other thing that you mentioned, some of the people there are psychiatric disorders, and just people's whole lives are just upset. The families are upset, destroyed because of the illness, and we don't have an awful lot to offer. But of course, there obviously is some sort of a commonality among all of these things, and so I'm really excited about the work that you're doing.
No, it's pretty good. And again, we're backing up. It's not guesswork. I mean, we've done enough cultures of patients, again, using informed consent of psychiatric patients to know, yes, they're, and not only that, we've seen improvements in some of these psychiatric patients from these natural products. And the nicest one, but when I come back, but I do have a nice up. Story to let you know about a lady who has been called schizophrenic.
All right, well, we're going to just have to take a quick break here, and when we get back, we're about have 3 minutes to hear the story. And for our listeners out there, I've known Dr. Martin for many years, and certainly an outstanding physician and scientist, and he's on the front lines of this battle. There are other good doctors who are trying to come up with an alternative to help people, because that's really what medicine at one time was really all about. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Dr. Martin, why don't you tell us the story about the woman who was supposedly schizophrenic?
She actually was, and I've known her for years, and again, because of aggressive components to her illness, almost shunned by some of the major institutions. But anyhow, she talked to her mother. She started to take some of these products of using organic farming. And her mum made the comment back that, well, first time ever does she seem to take to a medicine. Normally she kind of shuns these different things and resistant, but she was doing it. And lo and behold, if I didn't get an email from this lady who spoke to her in the past, concerned about her mother's health. And it makes 2 points. One, as with many of these families, the most severely affected person probably has a severe psychiatric diagnosis like schizophrenia. But these viruses spread throughout the whole family, and I know, and I knew the mother for some time, hystericism for her daughter, but in reality she had her symptoms. The fact that the daughter began to recognize that was an indication that the daughter was developing this empathy. And I took that as a real encouraging indication that, yes, this product was helping her. And that was some years ago, and since then we've come to better understand these products, and as I said, was able to get one of them licensed, approved in El Salvador, and that's the one that really is quite remarkable. But I know that there will be other products, and again, it's the argument of how quickly can we get this type of therapy into this country, into psychiatric hospitals. That's the challenge and the measure of success.
Well, of course, if it was marketed as simply a dietary product with no claims being made other than, as a tonic or something of that sort, could you do it under those circumstances?
Hey, I can tell you, Stan, when you have people from FDA or the Medicare service and so forth, and I'm pretty nice and I'm saying, you sound a bit intimidating. We mean to be. We are. We're threatening. I mean, there's, It's that very fine line, and I know what you're saying is, you know, sort of play that game and do it and don't tell anybody or somehow not be public. I can't do that easily, but the issue basically is as soon as there's any inference of a medical use, but I think people are beginning to learn that good food, nutrition, and so forth can be helpful. And I just see in these additional products.
Hold that thought for there for just a moment. Mm-hmm. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're going to wrap up the program with Dr. John Martin tonight. But he's certainly letting you know that there are things that are on the way. It's sort of like the old idea the cavalry is coming. Why? And, of course, I just hope that, Dr. Martin, you'll keep working with this and you'll keep us appraised of it. And perhaps we could even talk more about this on another occasion.
Oh, I'd love to, and I do appreciate how you've persisted with effective communication to the your listeners. So it's always a pleasure to come on your program, and I'm very happy to come on when there's a sense of progress.
God bless you, and good night. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, there's a lot of things that are out there. There are a lot of ill people, and maybe in some respects I'm doing more and helping more people, and just by communicating ideas and pointing out the dangerous things that are out there, that there are other alternatives, and certainly some things in medicine are wonderful. And certainly the reconstructive surgery that doctors do, and so much of what is done today is great. But my major concern is some of the drugs that are being given to people are frankly harmful, and they know that they're harmful, and the people in the FDA are releasing them and allowing this to happen because they don't either have the courage to stand up or they want to get a job working for the drug companies when they retire. If you've not read the book, The Truth About the Drug Companies by Marshall Angel, let me recommend that. If you'd like more information on any of the subject we've talked about, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. Our website is www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Let me once again mention we are having here this on the 19th of November in the Monterey Bay area where I live, an all-day seminar, and we'll be discussing all sorts of fascinating material, bringing in outside guests, and if you can come, well, I would love to have you. But you have to call ahead of time because we will be serving lunch. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Then, of course, in the last hour, we've talked about some of the other things, about the danger of influenza vaccines in the elderly. If you'd like Dr. Fudenberg's article, we'll be glad to send that to you if you call us at 1-800-544-8927. We recommend you go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. You can hear our programs 5 hours a day on the Internet, 4 hours a day on shortwave. And then, of course, if you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, Peak Oil 2. And contrary to everything you're being told by the controlled media in the United States, there is no shortage of oil or natural gas, but that really doesn't matter because the price is going to go up. It would take years, of course, to get it developed. And even, of course, efforts to recently to drill in the Anwar and the Atlantic National Wildlife Reserve, that's been stopped. They don't want to solve the problem, ladies and gentlemen. Tremendous pressure will be put on anybody in Congress who wants to solve the problem, because if you solve the problem, why, there would not be the coming crisis, which will lead to the impoverishment of the American people. And I fear the destruction of the American economy. But as part of the master plan laid out in the Earth Charter, well, that's another subject. If you'd like a copy of the Earth Charter, give us a call. And then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty. For our provision and our protection. Till we're together again, may the Lord be with you.